Welcome to Mr. and Mrs. Therapy, the podcast that empowers you to transform life's challenges into opportunities for personal growth and healthier relationships. We're your hosts, Tim and Ruth Olson, licensed marriage and family therapists and trauma experts.
As experienced therapists with backgrounds in addressing trauma and mental health disorders, we believe there is hope and there certainly is healing.
We have spent our lives supporting people through the ups and downs, and we want to share these insights with you. Together, we'll unravel the layers of personal growth, healing from trauma, and building healthy relationships. Each week, we'll bring you engaging conversations, expert insights, and practical strategies to help you heal from the past, foster healthy communication, and develop enduring love.
This podcast is your guide to transforming adversity into triumph, healing wounds and past trauma, gaining wisdom and insight, and creating meaningful, fulfilling connections. So if you're here to heal, to better understand yourself or your relationships, you're in the right place. So sit back, get comfortable,
bring your trauma and your drama,
and let's start healing.
Welcome to Mr. and Mrs. Therapy.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Mr. and Mrs. Therapy podcast. We're so glad that you're here with us today. In the last episode, we talked about why it's a struggle sometimes to stop unwanted behavior. And today we're going to be talking about why it's a struggle to start certain behaviors or desired behaviors that you've been wanting or meaning to start. And so we're going to go over four reasons why that is. And some of it may overlap and be similar to why it's hard to stop certain behaviors. But it's important to take a look at this because there are a lot of behaviors that I'm sure you have heard, like, oh, you should try this, or this is healthy for you, like journaling or walking or mindfulness or different things that you want to start in your marriage, like different communication tools that you want to utilize. But a lot of times what I hear in counseling is that when someone starts a new behavior, the other person a lot of times has a hard time to encourage that or feel excited about it. Because to them, they feel like, oh, this isn't going to be a lasting behavior. I've seen this before. It's going to last for 2 weeks, and then they're going to go back to their old ways. And sometimes that can be really discouraging for the person that is really wanting to change their behaviors, and they're hoping that their spouse will come along and support them through it.
And I think a lot of times people who have that kind of mentality where they are very negative on somebody who's trying to make the change, they're fearful of getting hopeful and then having their hopes dashed. But I always like to tell people in that situation, whether they're successful or not, even if it only lasts 2 weeks, then you have the benefit of being hopeful and excited for 2 weeks. But if you're negative and you lack hope and you're just kind of down in the mouth about it or talking bad about their efforts, then you have zero time where you felt good or where you felt excited or you felt happy about the new behaviors.
And then you guys are maybe even worse off because now your spouse that was trying something and making that effort is frustrated and discouraged by you. And so on that side of the coin, they feel like, well, why am I even going to try it again? And maybe it's something that you've been asking for a long time for them to work on and change. But because of that self-fulfilling prophecy sometimes where you assume, well, this isn't going to last, so you treat them as if it's not going to last, then oftentimes that cycle continues and it doesn't last. And it's not just because you're treating them that way, but why not walk alongside them and be hopeful and encouraging to them? Because if they do accomplish that, you both win.
And the other thing too is if you're going to be negative about it, it requires no more effort to be positive about it either. So if you were going to put that energy or time into being negative about the potential outcomes, why not put that time and energy into thinking positively and talking positively about those outcomes? Because again, even if they only last 2 weeks, at least you could be in a better mood for 2 weeks.
So let's jump in and talk about four reasons why we struggle to initiate or continue wanted and desired behaviors. So the first one is because of delayed rewards. And this is similar to the instant gratification we talked about in the last one. But a lot of times beneficial behaviors like exercising or eating healthy, often those rewards are delayed. We're not going to do it once or twice or maybe even in a week and see those results right away. There are definitely long-term health benefits, but it takes a while to see that, and it's not that immediate reward. So because it can take a while or they're delayed, it can reduce our motivation, compared to maybe other activities that we get that immediate gratification.
And I think this goes along with the idea, too, that people oftentimes only allow a reward that is the natural byproduct of the behavior that they're doing, versus I think giving yourself little rewards for little milestones can be very helpful for you then reaching that end goal. So that end goal has this very natural consequence of like, oh, I achieved this, whether it's getting my finances in order or getting my health in order or something along those lines. I have this very tangible benefit at the end of it. But if that benefit takes 6 months, a year, 2 years to get to, and you have zero reward anywhere along the line, then a lot of times you lose that motivation. Versus if you make shorter milestones where it's like, hey, if I'm good on this for a week, then I'm going to give myself a reward, or I'm going to allow myself to do this thing that I wouldn't normally do to help keep that motivation going. Now, part of the problem is that you do have to be the person who's policing yourself on not giving yourself that reward if you didn't achieve it. But then if you do that, you can feel this tangible emotional benefit from, hey, I made it this far, I'm going to get a little reward, even if you haven't seen any natural results yet.
Right. And then celebrating those small victories build up that momentum and motivation for you to continue on. And so that definitely is part of the solution, to set those short-term goals that lead to those small, quick rewards to help you maintain that motivation.
The next one is high effort and energy. So when you're going to start something new, it requires a lot more thinking, a lot more time, a lot more planning to try to make that thing happen. And like I said in the last episode, our brain is designed to help us achieve comfort. And so when we're engaging something new, it's causing us to stretch or to shift or to change. And that's uncomfortable. Our brain doesn't like that. So it kind of wants us to shut it down and go back to what we're used to doing. And so most of the time, what we find is that we are getting closer and closer to more sedentary behaviors or more easy or lazy behaviors. And then the longer we've been in that cycle, then the harder it is to then get out and start something new, because your brain's like, no, we haven't been expending this level of energy. I don't want to do that anymore. So just recently, in addition to our family workouts, I started trying to do 10,000 steps a day. I started feeling like my knees were hurting and my ankles were hurting a little bit. And I kind of put my finger on it. I was like, I think it's because I'm not up enough. I'm not moving around enough. I'm sitting too much. And so I started getting up and I started walking more frequently. And so if I'm sitting there looking at my phone, instead of just sitting on the couch, I'll pace around, or maybe I'll get outside and walk around for a bit extra. And that time when I was doing it, I remember for sure for the first week, I was like, oh man, this is uncomfortable. This is a lot. This takes forever. It takes a long time. But then once I kind of figured out a routine, then it made it much easier. Also, one of the benefits of technology is my phone started telling me like, hey, you've had a 21-day streak where you're going up more flights of stairs, or your calorie burning is higher. And I noticed, I was like, oh, it's been 21 days. Actually, now it's been 21 days. I found this routine that I've kind of set up that makes this a lot easier. I like to wake up first thing in the morning and I'll drink my coffee and I'll start walking. And then once I'm done with my coffee, I'll do a little bit of jogging. If I hit 3,000 steps when I first wake up, then it makes it easy for me to hit 6,000 steps before 12. If I hit 6,000 steps before 12, I'm guaranteed to hit 10,000 steps before the end of the day, right? If I take a little bit too long and I don't hit 6,000 steps till 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, then it makes it a lot harder. I have to put in a lot more effort. And so now I have a routine that I know if I do this, then I'm going to achieve this goal much easier. And so I don't have to put in effort to thinking about how does this work? What should I do? When should I do it? Now I found this routine, and the energy and effort that I have to put into is much less because I'm just redoing the same pattern over and over again.
And I think this is really hard to do, especially in the beginning when you are maybe feeling tired and overwhelmed and you're low in energy. And that's why you're wanting to start a new routine, or you're starting to implement a new desired behavior. So it feels kind of counterintuitive where, gosh, I'm so tired. My thought wouldn't be, okay, I should get up and get moving. But especially in that beginning portion, when you're creating these new routines and these new habits, it's going to take that extra effort. So when we look at the solution for that, it's really what Tim was talking about, just starting with small, manageable changes to ensure that consistency without feeling overwhelmed altogether. And then you're going to gradually increase the intensity or duration of whatever activity it is that you're doing.
And I think something to note, too, is I didn't start from day one hitting 10,000 steps every single day. It was I started doing some of the steps, and and hitting over 6,000 when I think my previous average would have been like 3,000. And then I kept pushing it. I was like, I want to get more. I want to try to get closer. And I kept pressing harder. Now, it's not a consistent upward trajectory. There's one day I think I had a very long client day. And so I was sitting on my butt all day and I didn't have a ton of extra time to put into getting extra steps. And so then that day was lower than other days. But getting that lower number, I didn't let that throw me off. I said, okay, well, you know, this is just a part of the deal. There's going to be some days where I don't get to do as many. And there's going to be days where I get to do more. And there's going to be days when I achieve it fast. And there's going to be days where I'm hustling at the end and trying to do some hot foot stuff, trying to get my last 1,000 steps or whatever. And I've got 15 minutes left. Actually, that happened last night. But I think the most important thing about it is whenever you're trying to change something is just elevating from where you are and taking steps towards where you want to be. Not necessarily thinking about, I need to immediately achieve this now, but I'm doing better now than I was. And so then that's great. And see, that's a little bit of a reward even in and of itself, just thinking about it that way. Like, hey, I've done more. That's great. I'm happy with that. But I had a standard for 10,000, but it wasn't my expectation I would hit that right out of the gate, but that I would build up to that and I'd try to be as consistent as possible, but also not thinking like, I've got to do it every single day.
Right, because I think that all or nothing thinking can really throw you off here. And that feeling of perfectionism can make you stop these new habits that you're putting the effort and energy into and feeling like, well, I didn't hit my goal. No sense in even trying. But even on those long client days that you're talking about, I saw you putting effort in between those sessions, even if it was just a minute or two. You weren't going to hit your goal in that time, but it was those little increments that you were just adding on when you could stand up and do those quick steps and do a quick little jog. Sometimes I'll be downstairs and I can hear kind of that fast feet upstairs. And I think, oh, good for him. He's working on his steps and he's staying consistent and putting that energy into it. Where it would be easy for me to feel like, okay, I have back-to-back clients all day. There's no way I'm going to hit this goal. So why even bother?
Oh, for sure. And I think too, having in perspective, like what's your end goal? Is it, I got to hit 10,000 steps or is it, I wanted to be on my feet more and I wanted to make my knees and my ankles feel better. And I've already achieved that goal, but also I recognize, okay, if I want them to keep feeling better, I need to keep this up. So 10,000 steps is more of the general guideline to help me achieve what I wanted to achieve, which is being up and moving more.
Which goes right into the third struggle to initiate or continue desired behaviors is fear of failure. And that's where that all or nothing thinking really comes in. Because a lot of times we can have this fear of failing and not succeeding or not seeing these expected results, which then prevents people from even starting or continuing that beneficial behavior. And a lot of times that possibility of not achieving those desired results can just paralyze you in action and discourage people from even starting altogether. And I can kind of see that feeling of overwhelm and being paralyzed. When I think about decluttering, I think, oh man, there is no way that I can declutter the space or get rid of enough to make a difference in the time that I have. And so it's easy to just go do something else that's maybe more enjoyable rather than really breaking it down and getting rid of that all or nothing thinking and just thinking, okay, if I can just tackle this one small shelf or this one drawer, and not feeling so overwhelmed and being paralyzed by that failure. And it ties together with the other two of that effort and energy and delayed results and feeling like whatever weight loss goal feels so far away. And I love watching those little clips or reels and those videos of people who show the progression of their weight loss, especially the extreme cases, because I could totally see how it could feel so paralyzing and think that's so far away. And the little efforts that they're putting in doesn't feel successful or doesn't feel like it's paying off right now because we get to see it kind of time-lapse and see their success and cheer on that success. And it totally encourages and motivates me in whatever area that I'm looking at.
And I think that fear of failure can be such an insidious thing. I remember I was watching this video of this guy. He was a war veteran and he was talking about his experience and how he was struggling. And he was actually doing a video and he was commenting about mental health and about therapy and things like that. And he had such a negative view on it. He said He said, I'm not dumb enough to think that anybody could actually help me with this. And that broke my heart because I thought, oh my gosh, this guy doesn't even know what he doesn't know. He could totally get help. He could be in a better spot. He could get alleviation from PTSD. But because he had this fear of failure, he didn't even want to bother trying. He didn't want to go in and try to get work and then be disappointed at the end. Versus he could go in, he could get the work, and then be so pleasantly surprised and happy that he doesn't have to struggle with the mental health things that he's struggling with. But that fear of failure kept him shackled in the pain that he was struggling with because he never really even tried to resolve it. And so I think a big part of the solution is this idea that when you're starting something new, you are going to fail. And just accepting it as a natural part of a learning curve or a natural part of growth and progression is when you start things off, you are going to fail. You're not going to do a great job. And it takes time and effort and practice to get better at things. But the only true failure happens is when you just totally give up and you stop trying at all. But not doing them correctly or not completing them how you had initially planned, that's not real failure. It just feels uncomfortable and it feels like failure, but it's just these steps towards success that you're actually taking. And so part of it is reworking how you think about or how you associate the idea of failure with your activities. If I don't hit 10,000 steps, is that a failure? No. If I hit 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 steps, that's more than the average 3,000 that I was taking. And so still it's a success because my goal was to do more. My ultimate goal is to be consistent with 10,000, but my general goal is just doing more, getting up more, stepping more, walking more. And so if I have that as my mindset and my mentality, it's not, if I don't hit 10,000, I'm a failure. It's a, hey, I hit more than what I normally do. I got up and I walked more than I would naturally during the day. So that's a success. That's a victory right there. And so the last one we're going to discuss is ambiguity in results. So what we're talking about with that is that either the results are not clear when you get it, or it's not clear when you start off that you're going to get a good result. And actually, similar to the last thing I was kind of talking about mental health, is that when you start mental health, you're not sure you're going to end up getting a good result. Unless you've gone to therapy before and you've gotten a good result, you're going in and it might cost you a lot of money and a lot of time. And then you might be concerned, am I actually going to get any benefit out of that? And it's not just going into therapy and you're going to get a guaranteed outcome. You do have to pick the right therapist who's going to be able to help you out with the specific problem that you're dealing with. And so when you're starting off, just this uncertainty of what it's going to look like on the other end can actually be something that really pauses or stalls you out a lot. Versus if you're worried about that ambiguity, I think a big solution that you can have to that is researching what are the outcomes. Hey, I'm going to look into this. Hey, there's this type of therapy. I'm going to look in. Okay, this is what people say about their results with this kind of therapy. Or, hey, there's some people over here and they say they get this result and that result. And looking into seeing what's an expected result that I can get if I'm going to engage in this new behavior. And so then giving yourself an idea, it's like, okay, I'm not just thinking theoretically, but I've seen from other people, they say they've gotten this result and that it's good in this way. And so I think it's worth a shot. I think it's worth trying. Actually, this happens a lot when I'm shopping on Amazon, right? You look at reviews and the reviews will say, oh, this thing's so great. It's so wonderful. Oh my gosh, I can't believe it. And then you look at the bad reviews like, oh my gosh, this thing's trash. You should never buy it. No matter what you look into, you're always going to find people who've had good experiences and people who've had bad experiences. But a part of it is you got to kind of aggregate the general experience that it seems like most people are having and then figure out, hey, it seems like most people are saying this is going to be a good outcome. So even though a couple of people said it's bad or it's an awful outcome, I'm going to try this. As a matter of fact, Ruth and I, we talk about EMDR all the time. We love it and we get great results for ourselves and for our family and for our clients when we do EMDR with them. But we've also had people who've come into therapy or people we've talked to, friends or family, who have had EMDR done on them and they've had bad experiences or they felt like they didn't end up getting good results. And so for us, we're so passionate about it. We love it. And we see these great results all the time. But then you have this other perspective. And I think part of it is when we find out, we dig a little deeper and we find out a little bit more about how their EMDR practitioner was doing it. We find out they weren't doing it the right way or they were kind of changing it or shifting it too much. And then it wasn't really falling inside the correct parameters. And so then it really didn't get the people the results that they were hoping for. Or the therapist didn't do a good job of setting up expectations. Hey, this is what it's going to look like. It's going to be uncomfortable for a bit. It may take between X time and X time for you to get results. But when you get results, it will be noticeable once that happens. And so I think the solution to that ambiguity is finding out a little bit more about what's going on and what do people say or what's the research behind this and trying to get a general idea of what I could expect, because then it helps to remove that ambiguity from your mind. So to sum up today's episode, The four struggles are: we have delayed rewards, it takes a lot of effort and energy, we have a fear of failure, and then we have ambiguity in results. And I think once you're able to address those four areas, it'll make it much easier for you to start engaging in those beneficial, healthy behaviors. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. And remember, your mind is a powerful thing.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Mr. and Mrs. Therapy. We hope that you enjoyed today's episode and found it helpful. If so, would you take 30 seconds and share it with a friend? Also, we'd love for you to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It lights us up to know that this podcast is helping you.
If you have any questions or a topic you'd like discussed in future episodes, visit our Facebook group. Just click the link in the description below. Although we are mental health providers, this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide diagnosis or treatment. If you are struggling with persistent mental health issues, chronic marital issues, or feeling hopeless or suicidal, you are not alone. Help is available. Please seek professional help or call the National Suicide Hotline at 988.
Thank you again for joining us on Mr. and Mrs. Therapy. Remember, there's always hope and there's always help.